I'm Alan Lytle, 91.3 WUKY News, with a special edition of The Business Side this week. Few Kentuckians can boast of a life and career than that of James Hardiman. From growing up on the banks of the Ohio River during the Great Depression to acquiring executive management roles at large international companies, Mr. Hardiman helped build corporations as a CEO, learned the ropes of Wall Street, and interacted with U.S. presidents and congressional leaders. Hardiman retired, quote-unquote, from the global company Textron in 1999, but he's arguably busier than ever, giving back to UK, including spearheading the recent public-private partnership that resulted in the construction of new residence halls on campus. Now you can read about his life story. Engineering Corporate Success is a memoir comprised of numerous interviews conducted by Terry Birdwhistle, the senior historian at UK's Nunn Center for Oral History. Terry and Jim recently stopped by our studios to talk about the project.
Terry, let me start first with you. This project, take me through the essence of this oral history project and why it was so important.
Well, as you know, Alan, the Nunn Center at the UK Libraries has over 10,000 interviews and on a wide variety of topics. And one of the topics that we've become interested in are people who have had careers like Jim's. And so I approached him several years ago about doing oral histories and telling his life story and talking about his incredible career, and he agreed to do it. The interviews were done mostly in 2009, if you can believe that, and then we did a wrap-up interview in 2018, and so then the book came from that.
And Jim, an awful lot has transpired from 2009 to 2018. Talk about what your life has been like over the past 9 years.
Well, Alan, I was very fortunate after I retired. I either was already on a number of corporate boards or asked to be on a number. And that lasted up till 2014. And as you know, there's age limits, and I had been extended beyond those enough that and that last one required quite a bit of travel to foreign countries, so that was the end of that. But then I got very involved with the University of Kentucky and some of their capital projects, and kept me pretty busy for a while.
Yeah, now the you presided over the very first capital campaign at UK.
I was not chairman. I was on it. Jim Stucker was chairman.
And Talk about the effort and a lot of the heavy lifting that had to be done to raise all of that money.
Well, one of the most important things, we got a consulting group from Chicago who came in, and we met over at Maxwell Place, and Charles Wellington was president, and it didn't take them long to say, you really aren't equipped. It takes a lot of people to do this, and we ended up having to hire people and put into various colleges. And then we had a goal of about half of what we ended up getting, but we got a real boost with the Bucks Per Brains came in, which was a matching gift situation that really helped us move over that goal. And we went over $1 billion with that one.
And the efforts to raise and to lift up the University of Kentucky, I mean, it continues even to this day.
Yeah, we're having another one right now. I think the capital campaign just butt up against each other, but we're having one now. The numbers are bigger that we're going for. We had a meeting yesterday, and I'm not much, as I mentioned in the memoir, about asking people for money. I got interested in giving and just hoped that maybe some people would follow that I knew that were capable of doing it, and from financial situation. But they keep asking me to be on these committees, but then they don't forget to occasionally remind me that on the committee you also have to be a giver.
And it doesn't take very long to traverse the campus and to see, you know, much of your influence. And of course, I'm talking most recently about this public-private partnership that resulted in the residence halls being built at the University of Kentucky. Can you talk a little bit about that effort?
Well, that was great. President Capiluto had some experience with, I think, actually only one hall in Birmingham. And I was not on the search committee. I did not know him at all, but he knew I'd been involved with some of the follow-up construction work on the hospital, working with Dr. Corp. So he contacted me and said he'd like for me to consider a project he had. And we started out by visiting the residence halls and over Thanksgiving holiday weekend, and they were in need of a little help. And we started talking about it, and he told me about this idea of developers who came on campus and actually either owned the buildings or put them up with the land leases from the university, and then we still own the building. And we got a bunch of proposals once we put the purchasing department put out a request, and then we chose five to bring in to interview. And I think my main contribution was working with some of my Wall Street contacts to see the strength of these firms, because you didn't want to get in the middle of something, and finally we had to turn around and take them back over. And that worked out well. And in the committee, I was the only non-employee on it, so I had a lot more time than the rest of them. But the committee came together and did a nice job of analyzing the data, and we had no trouble choosing the Education Realty Corporation and EDR to do the job. And it's been very rewarding to hear people talk about it.
I was going to ask you what thoughts fill your mind as you know when you travel a campus and look over there and say, yep, we had something to do with that. Yeah, we had something to do with that.
Well, I back in when I first was made chairman of the board, I was interviewed by the colonel, and they asked me what I thought were some of the needs of the university. And I said, well, I think that we had to improve retention rates and graduation rates, and I think one of the vehicles would be some facility additions. So that was back in 04, 05. And I meant that, and most of my contributions have been towards facilities. And but this was the highlight, because those living learning centers where these people are in there that are all going to school together or same curriculum, same college, and then the space we created for them to study together and to be together, all those were new to us. And we got all this help from the outside people. They knew what they were doing, and they could leverage a lot of the costs from what they were doing around the country, and so it proved to be a real project.
And I must say, it has to be a very different feeling knowing when you graduated from UK with your engineering degree and what that was like versus what it is like for the engineering or any other student at UK nowadays.
Yeah, it is. You know, I felt at a time when I was going through education and everybody around my time, it was more of a filter. And we were trying to go from one level to another. And if you didn't go, you branched off and did something else. Now, with a tremendous need for the background that a university can give you to go on and make a reasonable life for the typical family of four, it's a whole lot different situation. Now, we're on the end now of trying to encourage them to come, trying to encourage them to stay, trying to encourage them to get that degree. And as I said in one of the pages of the book, this Dr. Mitchell, a long time ago, professor of chemistry, he would say the first couple of times you were in his class, he'd say, look at the person on your right, look at the person on your left. One of you won't be here by Thanksgiving. So that's all changed, and these facilities, I think, have helped draw people and helped in these areas.
Back to the book for a minute. Terry, I'm going to bring you back in here. I know it is it's not easy. Jim doesn't really like to talk about himself very much, and so talk about that process of sitting down and really reviewing this remarkable life and career that Jim has had.
Well, Jim is very modest, and you know, we did the first 2-hour interview, And I think he was surprised that we didn't get him out of grade school in that first interview. And he sort of started to realize I was going to keep coming back, I think. But he really participated in it in a fantastic way. And what was really what I enjoyed about the project was to have him tell the story of somebody who started out in Maysville, you know, came to UK, got a degree, and then went on to head, you know, one of the largest corporations in the world and all the experiences that he had. And then after that, and even during that, come back and give back to Kentucky and be part of that. And so it's a story that I think all Kentuckians could learn from. And it's a, he lived his life in a way that, you know, you would want everyone to live and to make a contribution in the, so many ways that he did it. And then when we got to the part where he agreed that we would do a book, he approached that like he did everything else. He sat down and worked. And I've never seen collaborated with anybody who'd worked any harder than Jim worked on the book. And he kept me going about half the time. So it was a fun part of the project to work through those different drafts and watch that story develop out of those interviews. So I, of course, I give all the credit to Jim. He had the story and he put it together, and I hope people enjoy the book.
Yeah, and you know, we're talking about names, dates, circumstances. There are an awful lot in this book about leadership and the many steps that it takes to become a CEO. And there are a lot of lessons, life lessons in this book. Jim, what do you want people to take from the account of your life, and what lessons are there?
I think it can be done, and it's not quite as hard as you might take it, but you have to follow four or five things that you got to watch. You have to watch your health. You have to be willing to move. You have to find mentors. And I was trying to bring those things out that people could read about and maybe even only one of them take out, but to help them be, as I say, standing at the right place at the right time when that promotion comes. And you want to be in line there. And but there's ways to get there, and I think that one of the things exciting about doing this was the way Terry put it together in chapters. So, you know, and each chapter was somewhat important. That Maysville background in high school, the military was important, even though I was not the happiest soldier in the world. But and then you did the university, and then you go to a startup job, and then bam, oh, that company is bought by a large corporation, and I picked up a great mentor, and he taught me how to be the CEO that I wanted to be when I went to another company, Textron. So I just hope they pick up on some of those steps.
And also this idea, you know, when you mentioned your health, there's also the health at home, and we're talking about a work-life balance. That wasn't part of the equation early on. Talk about how that had to, how you had to work on that.
Well, you know, I don't know how that happened, Alan. my wife died about almost a year and a half ago, and that's why I was like the reflections chapter allowed us to include the end of that. But when I went to that funeral, I thought, what this woman has done, when people were talking about, it was unbelievable, but she took care of everything. She bought the houses. She took care of them. She raised the kids, the two kids who were in three different grade school and high schools combined. And we lived in seven different states and, you know, so many moves. But she just considered that's her part of the task, I think. And I didn't spend much time critiquing that, and she didn't spend much time critiquing me, including all the travel.
It was a match made in heaven in that regard, then.
It was. It was. I don't know how it all came together because, you know, we'd start out right away under probably a little quicker crisis, not crisis, but a stepping stone than a lot of people do. we got married, and about a year later, I got recalled into service. So we're off to Arkansas. And during that period down there, she became pregnant and had our daughter in Arkansas without parents around or et cetera to help her with. And that just started that way, and then one thing led to another.
You're just as active today and involved with this university, which you love, and the people. What continues to drive you? I mean, because you could play golf and just, you know, kind of enjoy life, but you always have your nose to the grindstone.
One of the things that comes out when you do something like this is that you start learning a little more about yourself. And I hit upon this phrase that I never went to bed that I didn't have an idea what I was going to do the next day. And man, if that idea was nothing, it would be a real shock to me. So I probably plow into some things that I could step around, but I do want to stay busy, and that's what drives me to go get into some of these things.
Terry, we have just enough time for a final thought about this project and maybe something that you've learned through it out.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the University Press of Kentucky for seeing the value in this project and bringing it to press. And it's just been a great experience for me to, you know, people ask me what's the greatest thing about being an oral historian? Well, it's hanging out with people like Jim Hardiman and getting to learn from them and experience with them their life story and be a part of bringing that to the attention of other people.
And Jim, how comfortable are you answering these questions from pesky press people like me?
I don't mind at all because I'm pretty well rehearsed going through this process that I've been through. But I have to admit, you got a special feeling of people have read this book and the comments you get, and people from Maysville that I haven't seen for years bringing up nice things and so on. So the reward is tremendous, and I'm real glad we did it. Terry did a tremendous job. He doesn't take as much credit as he should, but he was the urger to keep me going. And you had to have something to keep you going because how many times do you want to read the same thing over and over again? So it's been an enjoyable thing.
Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for stopping by our relatively new studios at WUKY. And the name of the book, again, is Engineering Corporate Success, a Memoir, James Hardiman, and it is available through University Press of Kentucky. And they go to the website and order that way, Terry, or is it even out yet?
Oh, yes, it's out, and it's available through the press. You can order it on Amazon or any of the places where you normally would order books from. And I want to thank you, Alan, for taking time to talk to us today and to talk to Jim about his book.
My pleasure, and continued success.
Thank you. Enjoyed our time.